She told about her crew losing that one, you know. I said, gee, I hope nobody else loses one. I made a remark and somebody over there heard me. I said, well, it's going to have to be some crew who has a member born on a nice windy day. And boy, that was ours. Yeah, when we left. Really laughed, all those things coming on like that. Maybe there's something good because my mom said I was born in the northeast wind. Windy month of March, so that maybe there is something to that, I don't know. But it seemed like every time Nate is hunting, he's out on a blizzard or something up to that effect.
That was really rough that day.
Well, last spring, I was going to go out with him, you know, when he went up inland to go goose hunt. We started off on a perfectly fine day, just warm, and we got about 10 miles out of town. It started to rain, and that rain turned to sleet, and by the time we were ready to camp up that first river, we had a blizzard going. So maybe there is something to that. I don't know. There's always things that are going on like that, people saying, you know, that it goes with you. Yeah, well, I wanted to go, but if Alice hadn't asked me, I really would have stayed home. I felt gloomy enough to stay home. And boy, sure as everything turned out to where we had enjoyment.
When did Nate go out to the ice?
Oh, they left on a Saturday. I believe it was on the 22nd. They left either 21 or 22, because we didn't cover the boat. The boys were making their own canoe, and so they got stuck every time. They didn't know which way each piece went. So Nate would get on the ski-doo and go around, see whose boat was out here, you know, and he'd come back and, gee, this is how they do it. Then he'd get there, and finally when they got it, why, it was, when did we have that skin sewed? It was either Tuesday. No, it was Wednesday. Wednesday? Yeah. We started cleaning the hides, you know, those brook hides. And by Friday, we had them ready. The women came over here and sold the covers. And 22nd, they went out. Funny the way that night, the first whale had been sort of, I'd been so disappointed over my work. It was getting me down real bad, this. My load, you know, my caseload. And so when I came home that day, on the 24th, I told my bosses that this would be it, you know, that I would not do my duties as magistrate any longer from this day forth. And I was just going to go up to the office and get all my belongings and come home. And it just worked on me that day, and the wind started to blow up. A big blizzard coming on the 24th. So I was puttering around the house, and when Alice came home, Mom, you're awful quiet. It's different, you know. This feeling that I had was just working on me. And so, after supper, I'm going to just lay down and take it easy. I turned the TV on, and Alice said, Mom, why don't you go where the people, go play bingo or something where a lot of people forget about your misery. And so I said, well, I don't know. It's pretty windy out there, and I just don't feel much like getting out of the house. Well, then come about 9 o'clock, you know, we were still watching the TV, and Alice says, Mom, I sure wish you would go. I've never seen you like this before. Well, there comes a time when you start thinking about your foolishness. I think I've done my foolishness on the impulse, you know. And I said, well, it's getting me down. I don't feel like I even want to show my face in public. So, well, anyway. Now about a little after 9, Alice says, I'll take the kids home. You go, Mom. You lock up the house and you go. Oh, okay, if it'll please you. So she called a taxi and went with the kids. At that time, well, I might as well go, you know. So I locked up the house and down to the bingo game I went. Just blizzard. You just blow me down there, you know. And I got inside there where they were having the bingo and everybody started remarking and we could see crewmen coming in because the wind was so strong. And one of the women, as I came in, it was quite late. The bingo had been going on from 7 o'clock. Well, but that time, Mary of Iwana comes in and she sits down and says, well, her crew had been coming in, you know. It's too windy out there. They'd lost one. They'd shot one and lost it. And gee, what? Why? Gosh, there's a lot of wind out there. The ice is breaking up and everybody's coming in. Well, it won't be long before Nate comes in too, I guess. He likes to go playing bingo. He'll probably mosey on in over here. So about that time, Jonesy locks the door. You know, so there was a big prize for that evening. And one of the women asked me, gee, how's the weather? Oh, it's terrible out there. It's blizzard. You can hardly see your next door neighbor's house. See, all the boats are coming in. And after Lloyd Jones locks the door so people wouldn't just come in just for the taking of the big prize, you know. He locks the door and he no sooner locked the door, 10:30, there were quick knocks on that door. Well, too bad. We've already locked up. You're too late, you can't come in, you know. Well, gee. What if somebody got a whale out there? What if somebody's kid is hurt? And every other mother was beginning to worry, you know, why that knock wasn't there. And then finally, Josie opened the window, and he looks out. Gee, there's a couple of hunters out there with their white shirts. They look like they've just been coming in. Maybe some crew member got hurt, you know. So he goes and opens the door, and one of the women, gee, nobody's going to catch a whale in this weather. So, well, whoever was born on a nice windy day, that's where that crew is going to catch a whale. Oh, so we didn't think much about it, but when he opened the door, he called the boys in. I said, hey, what you boys want? And about that time, what if the police want one of the mothers? I says, well, I'm no longer a magistrate. Nobody want me. And then about that time I heard, we want Sadie. We want Sadie, you know. And I looked over there. There was Danny, my son, just looking around as fast as he could in the room. And he saw me and says, Mom, we got a whale. And you know, from there on, I never knew what happened to my purse and my cards that I paid for. All I went, and gee, before I went, all the old custom, the women grab hold of it. Let's push her up in the air. She's got the first wheel, you know, and boy, I said, I'm too heavy. Let me know. Well, anyway, by the time we got quieted down and I got out and got on the skidoo, I knew the house was locked, but gee, the flag was right on top. The boys had already put the flag on top of our house. I came in, there was no place you could inch. Everybody from the neighborhood was here inside the house. They opened it up. And when I came in, that was it, you know? And they all started congratulating me and said, gee, I won't believe it until I see the Maktak, you know. For 3 years we've tried and never got one. The one we thought we got, somebody else went and took our flag away, and then, so that was kind of a disappointment. Then I was down around Fairbanks area in the seminar when Nate called me, and just seemed like I just can't kill a whale that hasn't been shot at or injured. Oh, by your time, I told him, one year, we'll get lucky. And so this is when Wilbur, one of our crew members, comes out with, boy, been trying for 3 years. Why, now let's see what would be a good situation to go out when we get out there. Well, this one thing, he said, once I get out there, why don't you let me handle your crew? You and Edward, you were talking to Nate, you know. You and Nate, get up to a barrel, go home when I get out there. And you know, that right there, Nate said their area, even though it was real windy, wasn't even breaking off. But here all these crew members were coming in. But something just kept him out there till that darn whale came up. And one funny part of it was, one of our crew members, Edward, who'd been awfully strong about trying to show everybody how to kill a whale, once he decided to go up towards the town, you know, the village, he no sooner went over the ridge when that darn whale came up, Wilbur and Nate got it. So when I heard that, you know, I said, gee, it was no wonder, Wilbur said, there's some members in your crew that will keep you from catching a whale. And I had to open my big mouth, you know, and I said that. But it's always been a custom to wear, when your crew is being held back, they try this. The crew captain is ordered to go up inland or someplace and have somebody, one other crew member, take over. But yeah, there are things to that you have to. And then too, there's a big superstition too, that you don't fight over whale catches. It's been, there's bad taboo if you should illegally try and catch your whale. I've known where this was done, and I asked about it, and said the whole family will just die out one by one. And they say it's known by your own knowingly if you took somebody else's whale. This is the price that you pay with those big animals. I don't know. I've seen it done. You know, I've seen it happen. Two families here, and they all say, well, that's the story that goes with it, that if you illegally take a whale belonging to someone knowingly, then this is the price that you pay. So we've always been, we're scared to take somebody else's whale like that, having been brought up like that.
Sadie, when did they bring in the whale meat that night?
Oh, well, there were people just lingering on in the house, you know. And I kept serving them tea, and about 4 a.m., well, a little before that, some of the people decided they'd go off. And I suddenly remembered we didn't have enough water. So Bernice Atungarak, Wilbur's wife, one of our crew members' wife, and Lucy Carey and her two girls, we started filling the ice barrels. And I put one that thing there, that big aluminum pot. I filled it up and had the heat on, you know, the fire underneath it, so it would be warm the next day when they bring the whale meat in. When they did, they had it all over in big containers over here, Matak, the huts, everything. Then about 7 in the morning, the water was boiling in that pot, and all I had to do was cut up the muktuk before any of the women came in.
I wanted to ask you some of the ways that you cook the whale meat or prepare it.
Oh, well, there are ways to serve the whole general public, the feast that goes with the whale catch. You just boil it. And then when you don't have the big crowd that you, you can make fried steaks. Delicious.
With the meat.
Uh-huh. Tender for the size of that animal. You'll be surprised how tender that. It doesn't have an oily taste to it, actually. It's sweet. It's sweet meat.
What do you fry it in?
In deep fat or whatever. You can flour it or put your, or you can put your breadcrumbs, you know, dip it in egg or any, whichever way you deep fry your, I've tried it always, all kinds of ways where, you know, like with oysters and stuff, I've tried dipping them in egg and then breadcrumb and then deep fry them. I tried that whale meat, just like putting it into little chunks, dip it in egg mixture and breadcrumb and just put it in there. It's delicious. It's really good.
And how do you make the pickles?
Oh, the pickle muktuk is, you boil it. It's, when you want it to be real tender, you have to get it, you know, right off the whale and boil it. And you already got your mix. You drain out the water that you boil the muktuk in. You cook the muktuk in, mm-hmm. And in a jar, usually in a glass jar or plastic container. We don't use it metal anymore. We used to have the big barrel, wooden barrels. Boy, that really gave the muktuk good pickling taste.
Do you ever put them in sealskin pokes?
Mm-mm. But because you have to put it hot. See, the water has to be hot. Boiling hot with your mixture of vinegar. 4-part water to 1-part vinegar. And put your pickling spices with a little sugar if you want in there to sweeten that. And then take your muktuk just boiling hot and stick it in the pickle.
The same with the whale meat? Or
is no, we don't pickle the whale meat.
Well, what's that other
thing? That is the aging the meat. Okay. It's the only animal you age that begin to taste like berries instead of any animal which you might meet, you know, you might have laying around. It'll get rancid or get moldy. Whale doesn't do that. It just turns sour, bitter, not bitter, but gets a real sweet taste to it. And we call it fermenting it.
Yeah. How long do you let it do that?
Well, it takes about 7 days, actually, to get it good and ripe. Once you keep it, cut it up in strips, you know, in your muktuk in small pieces, you can keep it for 2 or 3 days in a warm area, keep stirring it, and then put it down there where it's cold. Not freezing, but cool enough to let it stand and cool and not get bloated. We watch that. Once it bloats, you know, it puts air in there, it's no good. It has an entirely different taste to it. There are certain ways, I know, we've even gotten the brain out of the big animal and fry it, you know. Oh, it's good.
I noticed when the flag is up in a house and they cook up they boil the muktuk, but they also cook up the whale meat too.
Mm-hmm.
How do they cook the whale meat then?
Well, first you use two different waters, the muktuk. When you're boiling the muktuk with the meat, it will taint from the meat, you know. It no longer stays, the blubber stays white. It begins to cook with the blood of the meat. But if you use two separate pots, one for the muktuk, one for the meat, and one for the intestines over here, you use a certain amount, no more than five boilings. You have to dump it out and use fresh water. Otherwise, it begins to, the blood and whatever gets caught on the bottom and your pot doesn't boil as well. You have to clean it out and then change your water every fifth boiling.
Who makes the flag?
We make our own crew flags. I made that one.
How'd you decide on the design?
Oh, well, you kind of picture who has a flag. You know, you picture the designs and you don't want the same design as your the next crew. Mm-hmm. So you watch out for that. Well, you see all kinds of designs. The whalers' flags are homemade ones. Ours is a big black one with a square in the middle, white square in the middle. And I noticed that Mary, Viwana's, is about the same, only it has a black border with thin white strips with a black middle and then a white streak onto one side. It's similar, but it's the border, you know. Ours is all white in the middle, and Ralph's is black, white, and then a black square in the middle of the white.
I noticed so, Tom Brower's has a big white four in it.
Yeah, well, pet four. That's where he said he got his design from, because this is pet four. Petroleum Reserve number four. Well, we all have, you know, David Brower, my brother. Oh, we laughed. I remember when his wife died, before he married Jane, he wanted to put a crew up. So, well, now what do we do? What kind of a design you want? Well, I want a star in the middle of a white flag with a black star in the middle. Well, try as hard as we may, we couldn't make a five-point star. Every star we cut out would have 6 points, or it'd have 8 points. And so finally, said, who can we get to cut a star? And then one of the kids remembered, gee, there's one teacher that can really cut out a star, you know, 5 points. So we went out to the school and asked who it was that could cut out a star. And sure enough, one of the teachers, I don't remember just what his name was. I'd forgotten, but it was about five or 6 years ago, you know. But lo and behold, we got hold of a 5-point star. And I sewed it right in the middle.
Has he used the same flag ever since?
Mm-hmm.
I know you talked about your old flag too, Sadie. You said that it was a little different from the flag, or someone said it was different from your flag today.
Yes, it was. Well, what I tried to do at those times, I made a white arrow-like deal in the back, and the rest was black. And then we noticed someone had the same kind of flag. So what I did, I took the point and just made the big white streak. And you know, it was done over with a yellow deal, and when the boys stuck it out, well, they made remarks about that darn white, that flag, you know, so we didn't like it too well. And we discarded it. It's still down in the drawer, that old one. Yeah, one of Nate's friends, when he had it up, he said, "Ooh, you sure got a He-Man flag." And you can imagine what they meant with that, you know. So I didn't like that remark, so we got rid of that flag. I didn't want nobody else making that remark about our flag. Mm-hmm. But it was such a... I never figured, because when they hung it up, it did. It did look terrible. So we got rid of it. But it's down there. If you want to see it, I can show it to you. And someone remarked about that flag, and I didn't like it, so.
Have you ever been out on the ice with a crew yourself?
Oh, gosh, yes, many times. Even when I was small, you know, with Dad having five crews. Those times, those whalers, they were able to use the baleen then, you know.
To sell it, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Your father had five crews?
Mm-hmm.
When was that? What year was that?
Oh, gosh. Ever since I can remember, Dad had them. And then this was about when I was 19 years old. He still had outfits. He had the whaling station. You've mm-hmm. noticed the name of that store, Cape yeah. Smith Whaling and Trading. It's the original name of Dad's store. That was his business, whaling and trading with furs and so forth. Come spring, if he got hold of one of those big whoppers, you know, that had those baleen from up to 11, 12 feet, 14 feet long, mm-hmm. one whale brought in $10,000 baleen. Dad said that was where he got his start. But there was a lot of work cleaning those slabs of baleen. Clean them, wash them, send them to factories outside to be used as garment stays and so forth, like before they brought out that spring. Synthetic spring.
Yeah. What did women do when they went out on the ice?
Oh, you could cook. And you could tend to the needs of the men with sewing their mukluks. There they use this heavy outside made rubber boot, insulated boot. Now, in those times when you had to make everything by hand, sealskin boots, and some of the whalers' boots would come apart and you had to sew them and dry them. Took time out, they'd be awake during the thickest part of the whaling time, like second week in May, they'd usually come in. Right now, would be coming in beginning the 8th, we'd have the whale run so hard, so thick. They call it the sleepless whaling week. And that's when you were needed out there to tend to the men, because they'd be awake for 4 or 5 days at a time without going to sleep. And when they laid down, you know, you grab their clothes, dry them as much as you could, and then get them back on when they were ready to be needed, taking turns. But today, it's just the down... clothing and heavy takes the place of. And then when you got a whale, you had several outfits to change to. If you had caribou parka, if you didn't have the raincoat type deal to keep your parka clean and it got soaked, you couldn't wear it again. Mm. And these were the types of things the women did in those days. Be out there all the time, tending to the clothing, their food, and keeping the stove warm.
They ever go out in the boats?
Mm-hmm. They've gone out in the boats, too. You heard about Martha Aiken last week.
Mm-mm.
She jumped on the boat.
Wow.
When they were starting to chase the whale out there. And she came back. She had a story to tell. She said she never realized that you had to be so stern in the boat, with the boat going, you know, with a motor and swerving it. And she got from hollering, you know, because she gets so darn scared. And when they're chasing a whale, it is exciting. Because if you're hanging on to an injured whale, your boat can go lickety-split, and you follow that rope, they won't let go until they know for sure that that darn animal isn't going to die. And some other crew comes along and puts another bomb while you're holding on to it. You're drugged by that darn whale. And sometimes just going in, you know. So when you're a woman, why, that's very exciting. Mother got